The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
It's 10 p.m. Your baby has developed a temperature and you need something to take down the fever. You could possibly need something for teething. You might want to check with your pharmacist if there's anything really to worry about. You drive around looking for a pharmacy open at this time, but begin to panic as none is in sight. Shops are closed. What do you do? Where do you go? And parents won't be the only group who've run into this problem. So should the health sector take a look at opening times of pharmacies? Joining me to talk about this is Sheena Mitchell, pharmacist and founder of the health podcast at wondercare.ie. Good morning, Sheena, and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, as a pharmacist, first of all, what opening hours did you provide?
So for me personally, I open 9 to 7.30 Monday to Friday. I'm open Saturday 9 to 6 and Sundays and bank holidays 12 to 4. But actually yesterday I did a little survey of 70 pharmacist friends, pharmacy owner friends of mine, and 69 of them open on Saturday. So I thought that was remarkable. Saturday is available from like 9 to 6. Most of them opened during Monday to Friday, kind of 9 to 7-ish or a variety of that. And there were three only that were open past 7 p.m, me being one of them. And three then who maintain at all times an on-call mobile, right, by the bed. And then you've got five who open on Sundays. So it seems to be a little bit of variance between urban and rural areas. And look, I'm a third generation pharmacist. I grew up with the pharmacy phone ringing in our house. We used to answer it as kids on Sundays. So I understand the importance of access to community care.
Can you remember back in the day when you used to answer the phone? Were they genuine emergencies? You know, did you live over the shop?
So we didn't live over the shop, but we lived the other end of town, the shop, and they had it lined in. We had a man ring our house on Christmas Day stating he had an emergency. I remember my dad going into the pharmacy and us with him, because we always thought it was a bit of crack, and he was looking for Just for Men hair dye, and this interrupted Christmas dinner. And never did we
male hair dye.
Yeah. He was going to see his mother. We had people ring the house with profanities. There was nothing my father wouldn't do for his community. And my brother is in that pharmacy now. And he carries around that mobile phone with him, you know, to ensure that his patients always have service.
I was wondering whether back in the day that people would have taken it quite seriously if they were going to disturb the pharmacist on a Sunday or after hours. And therefore it worked because you weren't abused. But we live in a different era. You might well be abused.
And mostly people are very good. And yeah, look, it was only the rare, maybe different type of person who would have gone to effort to interrupt. Normally it is, and it's an antibiotic and people are grateful, and you could have four people ring and you'd say, OK, well, I'll meet you all there at 2 o'clock or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, my own business is in Milltown Total Health Pharmacy in Dublin 6. And because it's an urban area, like, I can't provide that service for safety reasons. In fact, I actually opened the door after closing hours one day and got held at knife point. So we have very rigid rules about our opening hours and security as a result of that. So there's no ad hoc basis.
Your survey, of course, was ad hoc. 70 pharmacists that you're acquainted with. There are how many pharmaceutical outlets in the country? Almost 2,000?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. And each one of those would have to have at least one pharmacist, because if you've got to have cover during the whole day, only a pharmacist can...
And actually, the average opening hours, right, from I've been looking at Pharmaceutical Society of Ireland surveys and the Irish Pharmacy Union surveys. So on average, pharmacies open anywhere between 60 and 70 hours a week. So you definitely need two people there.
Yeah. I mean, there would be a small pharmacist somewhere which will close for lunch. You know, so there's one pharmacist, they do a full working day. And if they have to go off on holiday or sickness or whatever, they have to get a locum. But otherwise, they try to handle it themselves. They'd be few and far between.
They would. And actually, you say they have to get a locum. Can't always get a locum. And this is one of the biggest problems. So now we have the fact, first of all, 63% of pharmacists are women that are on the register now. Women, by our nature, sometimes require flexibility in our working, maternity leave, whatever, okay? And if you are, like me, a pharmacy owner and find yourself with three young children and someone's sick, all of a sudden, like, what do you do? Like, it's a really difficult balance to get a quality of life, because you have to go to work. No matter what, the pharmacy cannot open without the pharmacist there. And if your other pharmacist is on holidays, like, you're really talking about an awful lot of difficulty for many pharmacists on the register. The other thing that we've noticed over the last several years is that pharmacists are choosing to enter the locum market as opposed to owning a community pharmacy or working
that
as a full-time pharmacist.
That means they can choose when they work. And if it's a female, for example, and she's having a baby, she can just stop doing locum until she's ready to come back.
Exactly. And the other flip side and issue with it is that sometimes locum work is more lucrative than owning a pharmacy business or just having a full-time job. So people could work 3-4 days a week of their choice and not have to turn up when the other pharmacist is sick.
Yeah. And no worries about PAYEPRSIUSC for a staff of maybe 3 or 4 people.
And one of the biggest problems we have in community pharmacy at the moment is the lack of streamlined administration work. We've got management, obviously, and regulatory concerns. And every single day, I don't know if you ever saw the Harry Potter movies, but Dolores Umbridge put up, I think it was movie 5, and it was, you know, a notice, special decree number 26. This is what we're getting from the HSE. The line, the goalposts move all the time. So what used to be, or what never was, but what really should be, a streamlined, straightforward claiming process. And like, this was identified as one of the key important steps in innovation and IT, that digital solutions need to be developed. We spend hours and hours and hours literally trying to find out if we're going to get paid for something. And then you have to fill out paper forms.
But I mean, surely someone comes in with their medical card or their PBS card and whatever their entitlement should be, it should be evident on the card, and that number should qualify for you to get your appropriate payment and you to feel free to dispense as the patient imagines you should be dispensing.
Wouldn't that be lovely?
But it seems logical.
Well, it's like that, and that would be the assumption. But can I tell you, that's definitely not the case. So at the moment, you know, we're experiencing a lot of drug shortages. So there's a lot of unlicensed medicines coming in which don't have codes. And there's also a lot of medications which are being brought into the market but are only approved for certain people. So you have to go on to, we've about three different, like we have a vaccination claiming system, we have the contraception claiming system, we have our manual claim, we have a scheme called hardship, which are for medicines that aren't covered on the GMS card, but they might approve them if you fill in a paper form and send it to your local health office. And
now, what do you do then when someone who's in dire need of this particular medication, and this might be a hardship case, do you have to dispense and pray that you'll get the money?
Yeah, sometimes, depending on the patient, you might just do, like, you might, if you don't know the patient, you might, and it's very expensive, you might have to charge them and say, I'll refund you as soon as this comes through. Often case, we do just take the hit. And actually, I know a lot of community pharmacists who just don't claim for, say, if they have a patient on 6 items and one of them, like, you're talking maybe it's 10 euro. It actually is more labour intensive to claim for that 10 euro than it is to, you know,
you
to
just forgo it,
you just forgo it.
Take the hit.
And that's so wrong. And the problem is we're hitting that obstacle in every area of our field. And we say, for example, it used to be the case that all the GMS prescriptions were printed by the doctors, and that was the HSE funded, you know, documentation. It was their issue. Now all consumables for prescriptions, ink, everything, printers, they're all being health mailed to community pharmacy. We have to print out every single one of them, sometimes in duplicate for the medical card, stamp them, endorse them, keep them in paper files, attach invoices, which we also have to photocopy.
But this is crazy stuff. 100%. You know, it's all supposed to be done digitally. I mean, I know that it's a very handy thing now that if I go to my doctor, they will email the pharmacist with whatever medicine they prescribe for me, and that's fine. It's very convenient for me. Yeah. I don't have to have a bit of paper and try to remember if I needed refilled and da 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 da. It's all there in the pharmacy. That's very convenient. But you're telling me that at your end, it's desperate.
In a way, it is very convenient because we like to get the prescription. We like to have, you know, like, it's a straightforward way, because actually what does happen in reality, or did happen, was people come in and say, I lost my prescription or whatever. So look, it's great for us to have the, I suppose, digital form, but it falls short. We need e-prescribing and we need digital health solutions, and pharmacy aren't the only people looking at this. You know, we hear consultants looking for it. We hear every aspect of healthcare, and all of these reasons, all of this pointless and actually ridiculous, tedious administration and bureaucracy has left the pharmacy workforce in a situation that 51% of pharmacies surveyed by the PSI said they're likely to leave their current role, and 27% that they're likely to leave the profession.
Now, a few things. In my area, there are loads of pharmacies. They all seem to be doing quite well. Thank you very much. I'm wondering to what extent, you know, hair products, cosmetics, hairbrushes, all of that sort of stuff, and over-the-counter medicines, which are not maybe redeemable, that that's where the profits lie. And in prescribing, the profits are not there.
So we're seeing a lot of evolution of pharmacy into kind of, you know, American drugstores where we're basically supermarkets. And for me, that isn't what we need. And it isn't what we need under Sláinte Care. And it's not what we need according to the WHO. What we need is a pharmacy service which is supported and facilitated to become an integral part of the healthcare system. So, yes.
But just to go back to my question, do you think that many pharmacies are surviving on peripherals, not on medicines?
Yes, I do. My own pharmacy is very small physically in size, like it's the size of, you know, a very small kitchen. And we work around it. And we are heavily reliant on our state funded schemes. And when FEMPI, the financial emergency measures, came in, right, we suffered devastating blows. So I actually bought my business a year before that happened. And the cuts were meant to represent an 8% cut across all healthcare sectors. It actually hit community pharmacy dispensing services by 29%. And at one point, my bank manager said to me, maybe you shouldn't have children because...
Wow.
That is the life that, you know, pharmacists who started their companies or businesses in their 40s or who are 40 or 50 now, that's the position they're in with the kind of devastation and the impact and shadow that FEMPI has cut on our service. And every other healthcare provider has had
okay,
that.
Okay, now you see the future as providing more services, doing more and being presumably paid for doing those extra jobs by the state.
And not only that, I actually want a restoration of our dispensing fee. So what's really important is that under FEMPI, our dispensing fee went from €6 to €4.58. And the labour costs of dispensing one item have risen from €3.73 to €4.58. The IPU are asking, and I know I'm just rattling figures and I hate that, but the IPU want a €6.50 flat fee for our a €6.50 fee, dispensing fee for every prescription. And we absolutely need that because pharmacy conditions are really difficult. If we could have more support staff, it'll become more attractive to pharmacists. Like locum pharmacists will enter the sector and engage as proper employees.
I'll read you some of the text coming in. There should be a rotating system with on-call pharmacies during night hours because there is a call for longer hours for pharmacies. But there's no point in having, in my town, for example, having four pharmacies open all night.
Yeah.
One pharmacy would do and perhaps rotate it.
And I really agree with that. But I think the only way that we're going to get to a position where we can increase our service level is to fund our existing services.
Another one down here in Carrick-Sivine, both pharmacies close for a half day on Thursday. Go figure.
I don't know.
Tradition, I think.
And small towns used to close on Monday.
Thank God for Boots. Only chemists open on Sundays. Our local pharmacy closes at lunch and all over Christmas. In Portugal, they have a hatch at night for prescriptions. Is Dublin the only capital city in the world that doesn't have an all-night pharmacy? In Romania, every city has at least one pharmacy open all night. They switch according to a preset timetable, and you can check on the council website which is open, or in the window of any pharmacy, there is a timetable printed. Vista Pharmacy is open in Ace until midnight every day of the year. An excellent service. We appreciate the access of these longer opening hours. At 20 years on critical medication, life critical medication, in that time I've been refused my medication three times in an emergency. Pharmacies need to be open 24 hours a day. People need to be aware of their rights. There needs to be a national database for continuity of care for chronic patients and to prevent abusive medications. Prices also are still too high. There's a system here in Germany whereby there's always a pharmacy open all hours, every day and night, within a district based on a rostering system. If you go to your local pharmacy and it's closed, it will list the pharmacy that is on call and open that night. It may mean up to a 20-minute drive, but over the years, with small kids needing antibiotics, I availed of this service several times. Pharmacies are so scarce. Canada were in the RDS trying to recruit Irish pharmacists to move there. They do one exam and can work away in Canada. Pharmacy in Canada do basic general GP duties 7 days a week and are hugely popular. Recruiters said Ireland is 30 years behind in pharmacy services in comparison to Canada. It's a thriving, busy and nice career being a pharmacist there. Are the pharmacy robots a threat to their career going forward? My daughter works 9.5 hours each day with no breaks. Whatever she eats, she does so in a few snatched minutes here and there. Can't even go to the toilet in comfort. Longer hours opening? You have to be joking. Imagine the number of administration staff that would be needed to get rid of all this torture of paper and red tape if it was fixed. That's why the unions won't allow it to be fixed. That's from Sean saying the red tape is deliberate to keep people pushing pens. So your final comments, Sheena?
My final comments are that before we extend to any additional services, we need to be funded for the services that we're doing. And that will allow us to make community pharmacy an appealing profession for those pharmacists that are qualifying now. We need to streamline e-health. We need to streamline our administration. And we need to have a chief pharmaceutical officer appointed who can help steer the department. There's no voice currently in the department to inform them on best protocols for medicine shortages and whatnot. There is so much that needs to happen, and it won't happen without leadership.
All right. Look, Sheena, thank you very much for joining us. Sheena Mitchell, pharmacist and founder of the health podcast at wondercare.ie. Sheena, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.